Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fresh Take from the What Fresh Hell podcast. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy, and today we're talking to Dr. Christine Coe. You may know Christine as the co-host of the Edit Your Life podcast. Christine is a music and brain scientist turned multimedia creative. She was awarded a fellowship from the National Institutes of Health to fund her doctorate research, and she did her postdoctoral fellowships at places like Harvard and MIT. She's pretty smart. Christine creates content to help people live better, happier, and with elevated purpose and intention. She's the founder of Boston Mamas. She's the co-author of Minimalist Parenting. Christine lives in the Boston area with her husband, Jonathan, and daughters, Laurel and Violet. Welcome, Christine.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, ladies. How are you? I am so delighted to chat with you. I mean, we're going to get heavy, but it's going to be good.
When we were thinking about having Christine on the podcast, we sort of were narrowing down, like, what should we talk about? And we came up with this concept of building a family after adverse childhood experiences. This is something that we've had a lot of people reach out to us on our Facebook group, facebook.com/WhatFreshHellcast. And this idea of how do we build a family if we have not come from a family that modeled the kind of family that we're trying to build. And so Christine Coe has written about this subject and lived about this subject, and she's going to talk to us about it today.
Christine, tell us a little bit about your own story.
Yeah, well, let me just say first that I am so amazed and happy. I don't know if that's the right word, but I am happy that the conversations are happening in your community. I mean, I think it's something so many people are wrestling with. And, you know, I'll say personally that, so I grew up in the Boston area, family of immigrants, one of seven kids, not a lot of money. It was very stressful. And there were a lot of other things going on, a lot of chaos. And yeah, it was really, really hard. And, you know, my siblings and I just slogged through it. But it wasn't until 2 years ago at age 45, which is crazy to me, that I actually learned that there was a name for what I experienced, you know, adverse childhood experiences. I was working on a project in partnership with the CDC, Injury Center, and the American Academy of Pediatrics. And I remember sitting in this briefing meeting, learning about ACEs and just being like, oh, there's research about this. You know, the formally speaking, you know, there are different types of adversities that have been quantified, things like, you know, physical, sexual or emotional abuse, domestic violence, living in a home with mental illness or substance abuse, incarceration of a household member. And through this work, I realized that I had experienced 5 out of 7 of these adversities. And I was like, that's not good.
I learned this term from you. I hadn't heard it before, but it was kind of one of those ding moments of like, oh, right, that's a quantifiable, that's a thing we can name. It's adverse childhood experiences. And someone has put together a list.
I have the list here. It's from the CDC, put together the list of what the adverse childhood experiences are. There's 10 questions on a questionnaire that you can take. And I'll put the link in the show notes. So if this speaks to you at all, you can get the questionnaire and take it. But the types of experiences that the CDC says are categorized in this are emotional or physical neglect, verbal humiliation, growing up with a mentally ill or addicted family member, incarceration isn't on this list, but I think it is, you know, more generally, because the last category is parental abandonment through divorce, through loss, and I suppose through incarceration, just an absence of a parent.
Yeah, that is one of the little tricky things about ACEs is that depending on your source material, there some of the numbers are, they're, how it's quantified is a little bit different. But, you know, in a nutshell, you know, it breaks down to really stressful stuff during childhood. And a lot of people suffer that. And many people like me, you know, don't even know it has a name. So I was actually really, and even so, that was a little mind-boggling to discover that so late in life. You know, it also left me with this question that was, you know, answered during this briefing session I was in outside of Chicago, you know, that there are ways to turn that ship around. And, you know, a lot of people, when they hear about sort of how I grew up and what my circumstances were, they're sort of like, how did you manage to be such a functioning human being? Ultimately, it boils down to the fact that, you know, the technical lingo for it is SSNRs, which is, you know, that's very researchy. It basically boils down to safe, stable, nurturing environments, like people, like, you know, people all the time, whether it's sex ed or whatever else, talk about the importance of trusted adults. And that's what it really boils down to.
You're saying for you in your life, it boiled down to you may have had a chaotic home life, but you were able to find safe, nurturing adults outside of that environment.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and I can send you the link that, you know, which is the post that I think you read and are referencing. But what I realized through this process is, one, you know, there were all these people, you know, throughout, you know, secondary education and then also college, who stepped in to support me, and I wasn't asking for help. I was not an ask for help person. I have never been an ask for help person. They just noticed and they supported. And even when I was not doing that great, you know, metrics wise, like, you know, I have an English teacher from high school who, you know, I was a, this is the other thing people don't believe because of all my degrees now, but I was a terrible student in middle and high school, like solid C's, sometimes D's, except in music. And
were you struggling or indifferent?
I think it was just, there was so much chaos and I could not, I think part of it was, you know, brain development. I just wasn't, like, the way things were presented in high school just did not compute for me. And I remember thinking, I wish I could understand this. But then I also was dealing with a lot of chaos and there wasn't a lot of space for, you know, learning and growth. And it wasn't until I left home and went to college where I sort of had the space to sort of be my own person, sort of get out from the stressors, you know, those stressors, and really thrive. I mean, that's what happened. But, you know, so anyway, I had this high school teacher who, even though I was, you know, struggling my way through to just get a C in humanities or whatever, this woman, Lucy Myers, I write about her in my post, she was like, you are a smart person. It kind of makes me teary just thinking about her. You know, she was also the advisor for the student paper, and I worked on the student paper. And so she was always supportive. And to this day, we are in touch, which is crazy, right? We still exchange holiday letters. Back in the days of seeing people, you know, we would get together for lunch once a year. So it was the people who stepped in like that, and a ton of music educators, I got to say, and, you know, said, you know, there is something, you know, you have value. Like, that just goes a long way for kids.
So they perceived you as needing the support, which you clearly did. Do you think at that age you perceived yourself as needing support? Were you thinking, oh, thank God somebody's throwing me this life raft? Or were you sort of like, why do they always want to talk to me after school? I don't understand. I'm just a kid doing my kid thing.
No, I don't think I perceived needing support because that was just what life was. Like, I didn't know anything different. I never accessed school support services. I never would have thought to. And I mean, I do remember a social worker from, you know, my childhood coming, you know, over at one point. And that just, to me, I just thought, you know, oh, that's just happening. It didn't even occur to me. So, and it wasn't these teachers, these music educators, I was just seeing them in sort of everyday life. They weren't sort of doing anything crazy or going out of bounds or making more contact than normal. But I think they were just, they saw something, you know, they just supported me sort of along the way for regular contact. And it just, you know, it's crazy. The simple act of being seen, like how important that is for a kid, and also to be told, you know, if you're really self-critical of yourself, as I was at that time, just because I hung out with smart kids, but I wasn't as smart as them or wasn't making the grades on paper, you know, to tell them that's not the only thing that establishes your value, you know, that was really important.
And I think it's interesting that probably, I think this is true. Let me know if you agree that even people who had very chaotic childhoods, hopefully people can look to that framework of safe, nurturing adult that hopefully most kids had somewhere in their lives that provided that safe, nurturing adult. And does that become your building block for moving forward as you start to think about becoming an adult? Like, what role do you look back and see those safe, nurturing adults having had in your development?
You know, I think that they gave me access to, and of course, I didn't have the words for this back then. I didn't have the words for it till 2 years ago, right?
Right.
But I think the key is that these safe, you know, stable, nurturing relationships, they help you cope with what's called toxic stress. And the toxic stress is really like, I remember learning about it from a pediatrician at AAP. And, you know, he was saying there's kind of like, you have kids who have a really stable childhood and then kids who don't. And then there's this sort of like, for a while, there was this sort of black box in the middle about like what helps determine whether a kid like me, you know, thrives or tanks. And it is, you need something to cope with that toxic stress. And for me in particular, the real stress lever and the thing to cope with that was sort of joy through being reasonably successful at music and, you know, having something I was actually good at. Like, I definitely wasn't good at school, but I was good at music. So I think that's why, not surprisingly, all these music educators were such a big part of that story, because, you know, they were supporting me all, you know, along the way and encouraging me. And so I think that was the big thing. So, you know, whatever environment it is, you just need somebody and something to focus on that actually, it sounds, in our current, you know, sort of condo language of, you know, finding something that brings you joy, like literally you actually need something that brings you that sense of fulfillment and joy in order to kind of cope with that stress. And that's huge. If you have a kid who can find that and you're an adult and you can help a kid tap into that, that's the gold right there.
Even probably for parents who, you know, have a more functional household, that's still, for kids who are stressed on any level, finding that outlet that brings them joy is super useful.
It's huge. Yeah. And it's important to say it might not be the same as yours. It might not be something you understand. And like, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That your child's joy might be different from your own, you're saying.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, my 9-year-old is super tech savvy and is into this game called Roblox. I don't know if your kids are into it, but Lord.
We're familiar.
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, I know way too much about Roblox.
But creating little tutorial videos, that brings her joy. And I don't understand it. And I only dive into it enough to make sure all the online safety stuff is happening. But I won't get in the way of that, because that is a survival thing through this, through what we're going through right now.
I want to dive back in a little bit more into the sort of science behind this ACEs concept, and we're going to do that right after we come back. Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
Margaret, I've been at the research again, looking into metabolic health and, more importantly, metabolic flexibility, which turns out is the key to improved energy levels, better sleep, better fitness, all the things. And I found out about all this because we got a chance to try Lumen, the first handheld device that helps you manage your metabolic health.
Lumen works when you breathe into it. If you do that first thing in the morning or after a workout, Lumen measures your metabolism by measuring the amount of carbon dioxide in your breath. It's science, people. That lets you see exactly what's going on in your body in real time.
Then you use Lumen's app, to get tailored guidance to improve your sleep, your nutrition, even stress management. If you're interested in figuring out the effects of different sorts of foods on your body, Lumen is a really cool way to see what's actually happening as your body burns different fuel sources.
If you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me and use Fresh to get $100 off your Lumen.
That is LUMEN.ME, lumen.me, and use the code FRESH at checkout for $100 off.
Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode.
You know, Christine, what's so amazing about this ACEs research, which has exploded in just the last couple of years, is that we're understanding that if you had an ACEs childhood, which means you had adverse childhood experiences, it can actually harm your brain as it's developing. And people who had ACEs childhoods are 390% more likely to have chronic pulmonary disease. They're 460% more likely to have depression, cancer, and other chronic conditions decades after the trauma, I guess because of the toxic stress?
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things, this early adversity, this is really common. So I think that's really hard. However, you know, the other thing is that, yes, there are biological implications to what's happening. You know, I think that it's probably beyond the scope of what we can talk about and what I'm prepared to talk about. But, you know, ACEs will change, you know, the way your genes work and the way your brain forms and functions in a not good way, especially if, you know, those ACEs are severe and long lasting and lead to that toxic stress we were talking about before the break. You know, that sort of overactivation of a kid's stress response system, I mean, that just wears you down. It wears down the body. It wears down the brain over time.
Yeah.
I think it's important to say, like, we're not pointing this out to be like, hey, you had a horrible childhood. And guess what? Also, more chance of cancer. Like, it's not to just say, like, hey, this is to say what people are realizing, and it's, I think, very useful knowledge, is that adverse childhood experiences, I think that, you know, in our generation, my parents certainly were kind of taught, like, let's not whine about the past. Let's move on to like who we're supposed to be. And what we're saying with this, what we're dialing into this research about, is not like, yeah, it stinks to be you. It's that this is real. This had a real serious effect on your body and mind. And so now what? And so it's not about dwelling on like, oh, this is so terrible. And, you know, I don't want anyone to leave with the feeling of like, oh, well, I guess everything's ruined. But it is the thing of like, let's really dig into what our childhoods were like, because it's going to affect our actual lives.
Absolutely. And that, I mean, the good news is, I know, you know, we've been talking about like really not great numbers, but the good news is that, you know, early adversity, it's not destiny.
Yeah.
You know, we were just talking earlier about how, you know, if you can carve out those levers to, you know, mitigate toxic stress, if you can find those trusted adults, like, that can turn stuff around. I mean, that is really, really important. So, I mean, that is the good thing. And I even think that, I mean, certainly I'm very pro therapy, obviously, but there are things that you can do, you know, even, you know, maybe you didn't have all of the sort of, when I look at this list of people who sort of stepped in gently, you know, to support me without me asking, I feel sort of humbled and overwhelmed by that. You know, that, what a gift, you know, but if you didn't have that same level of support, I feel like there is certainly work that you can do as an adult to sort of try to, you know, unwind some of that stuff and work on it even, you know, even later in life. I really do believe that.
What does that look like? Is that therapy? Is that?
I mean, I think it's the similar, I mean, and I don't know how, you know, the CDC and AAP would respond to this, but I really feel like those threads of what are important to us as kids are important to us as adults. I mean, think about all the conversations we're having right now about how important it is to lean into your relationships. I talk about this all the time, whether it's on Edit Your Life or elsewhere, you know, how important it is to find things that you care about that make you feel good. You know, that's basically, you know, all of us right now are experiencing enormous amounts of stress due to this, like, long pandemic that never seems to be ending, you know, plus, you know, national chaos. Leaning into the little things that can sort of take your mind to a different place to give you a release from some of that stress, even briefly, I mean, so important just for everyday mental health. So I think that a lot of the threads are actually very similar.
Can I ask you, I loved this when I saw this on your Instagram recently, you talked about the difference between protective care and restorative care. This was a great concept.
Oh, yeah. To me. I'm big into this right now.
So I'll give one example that Christine gave on Instagram, and I want you to talk a little bit about the difference. So protective care in relationships would be letting go of the toxic relationships in your life. But restorative care is actually focusing your energy on loving relationships, sort of chasing the joy.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about the difference and how we can do these things?
Yeah. Well, so I came up with this term because, or this phrase, because the shorter, more economical term is self-care, right? And people talk all the time about self-care.
Right.
And then sometimes people roll their eyes about it because they think it's all mayonnaise and massages and we can't even do that right now. And
we're in the backlash to self-care phase of the self-care conversation. Yes.
For sure. But I think what I was really thinking about a lot when I shared that post was that, you know, our care for ourselves, it really requires two things. And I hate to make, you know, life seem harder, but the protective stuff is really, I mean, both things require intention and, you know, thinking and action. But I feel like the protective stuff is working on, you know, putting up some boundaries around yourself. You know, Amy, you mentioned the toxic relationships, and that can be, I mean, it's hard to like just say, okay, I'm going to let go of my toxic relationships. But, you know, a more concrete way that could play out is, you know, perhaps muting or unfollowing people that make you angry, or just, you know, putting up a little bit of boundary, you know, maybe not responding to all your, or picking up the phone when so a triggering person calls you, that kind of thing. So that work needs to happen. And I feel like it needs to happen in tandem with the restorative stuff, you know, like the quick text to friends you love, the GIF thread, you know, things like that. In order, I feel like those two things kind of need to happen in concert for sort of your restoration and like your betterment of yourself to really stick.
Let's talk a little bit about if your own journey and this idea that we kind of started with of starting a family after having a childhood that involved adverse experiences. And I know the kind of feedback that we get are people having this feeling of, I feel like I'm out in the middle of nowhere. You know, I don't know how to be a good parent because I see my friends and they say, oh, my mom would always say this, or, you know, and Amy and I both came from those kind of childhoods. But, you know, in generations back in my family, there are people who did not come from those kind of childhoods. And some of them have successfully, you know, built families. Some of them have struggled more. And I'd like to just know your thoughts on that. What are the differentials there? What are the techniques? What are the helpers there for people who find themselves like, I am building a house with zero blueprints?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, the very first step is to just try to give yourself a little grace and space. I mean, when you don't have a blueprint, it is really, you're probably relying mostly on a list of things that you don't want to do.
Right.
Like, I remember when I became a parent, I was like, okay, number one thing, don't get angry. Don't get angry. Don't be upset. Don't cause chaos. And I mean, that has taken years of therapy for me to unwind and understand that anger isn't always bad. I mean, getting angry, showing emotion, drawing attention to yourself, those were very dangerous things for me growing up. And so it basically emotionally stunted me as a human being. And now I'm the kind of adult who actually has a children's emotion chart in my office so I can point to my feelings and try to work on figuring out what I'm feeling. That's where we're at now.
I think that's interesting, though, that you're not afraid to say, I had a friend who had modeled a lot before college and basically was starving herself for several years to stay at like 100 pounds and whatever her 5'10 frame, you know, because that's what she needed to do to work. And she got to college and she had to go see the nutritionist. She had forgotten how to eat food. And the nutritionist had to give her like the picture of the plate that has like the clock signs, you know, and it's like, put some vegetables here, put a protein here. And she was laughing like, I'm basically a 2-year-old, like with my food plate.
I know.
And it's like, whatever it takes, sometimes you have to go way back to brass tacks.
You really do have to go way back. So, you know, that was one thing I wanted to not do. I mean, and then the flip side of trying to build a blueprint based on the sort of negatives was also trying not to overcompensate, right? So I grew up, you know, we were basically, you know, 7 kids, not a lot of money. It was really hard. You know, we never had, I don't think I had a stuffed animal until I was like 5, and it was because I got my tonsils out. You know, it was like, I mean, there just was not a lot to go around. And so I found actually that one of my biggest challenges when I became a parent was trying not to overcompensate and, you know, push my own childhood desires on my kid. And, you know, I should also say I was the kid who wanted to sign up for everything, but could sign up for nothing. So I remember trying to, you know, put all these things in front of my older daughter. And she was like, no, I don't want it. And it was very confusing and sometimes angering for me. And I was kind of like, you know, I didn't say this out loud, but what I was saying in my head was like, don't you understand? You know, you're lucky. You should feel grateful for all these things. No, she shouldn't. Like, she has no idea. So I think it's kind of two sides of the situation is, you know, one, trying to figure out a more positive baseline and the kind of family that you want to build. And also understand that you may have a plan, but, you know, your kids are going to be very different people with very different interests. So, you know, you have to allow for flexibility and letting people figure out, you know, what their thing is too. It can't just all be about you, sadly.
Right. You can't be the football coach dad who's like, you will be quarterback because I didn't make the team.
Exactly. Yeah.
What about receiving love as an adult? We had Ned Halliwell on our show last week, who has written Driven from Distraction and all the books about ADHD. And he had, he talks in this new book, ADHD 2.0, that he had an ACEs score of 8.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
So he's like, you know, like, there's no way I should have grown up to be, you know, have written 20 books and, you know, happy marriage and 3 wonderful children. And, but I did it. And the way to do it is that you have to save your own life by learning to take in love rather than push it away.
Yeah.
And I thought that was beautifully said because, yes, if you are getting a message that you're not worthy of love or that protection means, you know, hiding from intimacy, then how do you sort of recreate that as an adult?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's probably, you know, and I will say, so here's the funny thing is that my growing up, even though it was hard, there were still, like, I, at some big baseline level, like, you know, I knew my parents loved me, or I kind of had that sense that that was the framework of what should be happening. And certainly my mom was really the anchor through all of that storm. And it's probably not surprising that my first sort of serious relationship in life ended up being like this tremendously emotionally abusive 3-year, you know, ridiculous circus. So I think there, you know, as we are seeking, I think that it's kind of an ongoing process. I mean, I think that the ability to feel like you're worthy of love is also connected to your ability to feel like you can ask for things or that you, yeah, it's connected to so many things. So I think that it requires working on trust, which is also really hard. And it also requires you to really try to continue to nurture relationships that you, I'm thinking friendships in this case, where you do feel that sort of unconditional trust and love. And, you know, I've definitely broken some relationships in the past because I could not figure that out at that particular time in life. But that is one of the greatest gifts I feel right now. And I still sometimes have to remind myself, okay, it is okay to be my full, like, messy, broken self in front of this person. And those relationships are really, you know, the gold that is getting me through right now.
I think that rebuilding factor is so interesting. We're going to talk more about that when we come right back.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practiced after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
So before the break, Christine, you were talking to us about, you know, building new relationships. And I think and as always, when we have conversations with people about things, what strikes me overall is no matter how niche the thing we're talking about, no matter how far away it might feel from my life, any given issue, it resonates with everybody. Like everybody has this problem of trusting themselves to accept love. Everyone has this. So many moms have this problem of like allowing themselves to be vulnerable and ask for help. It's something that all of us can work on. Mm-hmm. And I think one of those things is like this idea of trusting relationships. And I think for a lot of people listening, rebuilding does look a lot like finding a new family sometimes. Mm-hmm. Even people with difficult childhoods are still sometimes in contact with their families, sometimes in contact with the healthier members of their families, whatever it may happen to be. But talk a little bit about like found families and building new networks. And also, you talked a little bit before about cutting some of that involves boundaries with some people who maybe brought some trauma earlier in your life.
Yeah, I mean, it is really hard work. And, mm-hmm. you know, I will say that especially when you have a family as large as the immediate family that I grew up with, like it's probably statistically impossible for everybody to get along great. You know, I have one brother with whom we are just 100% estranged. I haven't talked to him in years. And that really makes me sad. And I know that I have tried and tried again. So I think, you know, one of the best lessons I learned from my therapist was that, you know, anyone, can't control what other people do. You know, we can only control how we react, how we navigate a situation, and the best we can do is try to show up in the best possible way there. So I think that's part of it, is figuring out, okay, you know, is there something I can do in this relationship? You know, what is the most satisfying thing that I can do to try to heal or move forward or whatever? But I think, you know, in terms of relationship build, you know, I don't know if you guys know Laura Tremaine or if you've talked to her, but I had a fascinating conversation with her where on Edit Your Life, and she has a book coming out called Share Your Stuff. And, you know, it was just such a fascinating conversation because she really, I love the way she frames how important it is to open up in order to strengthen those relationships. And, you know, I think for us, like, you know, the three of us on this podcast right now, we think of sharing as a very public thing. But her point was really like, it doesn't have to be public. It can be just one-on-one, and that women really struggle to share, you know, their selves with one another because we feel like we don't want to dump or we don't want to be the drama friend or whatever that narrative is.
Or we feel sometimes that what we're going to share is too ugly, like it's not right.
Yeah, if you're somebody who has experienced a lot of hardship, you know, I certainly felt this like, ooh, should I not tell this to people because then they're going to think I'm like really damaged goods and run away. And in the instances where that happened, like you don't want those. Those aren't the people who are going to be on your team. You know, the people who are going to be on your team are the people who are going to hear that and be like, wow, I'm sorry. That sucks. I love you. You know, so, I mean, that's learning too. But, you know, so I think that we have to work as adults, you know, on embracing a little vulnerability and exercising a little trust, knowing that, you know, if somebody does reject you for sort of sharing and being vulnerable with them, you know, that's telling. And then, you know, you have to move on and try to trust in the next, you know, relationship.
Does that include talking to your kids, keeping ages and stages in mind? I'm just curious. Does that include talking to your kids about your own history?
I think it does. Again, I'm glad you said ages and stages. It's very important. You know, my kids do know. I actually have, because of what I have dealt with in life, it's been really important to me to not try to make everything rosy. It's been important for me to show them when I'm having a bad day and to be honest about it, because that's part of like the resilience building thing, right? You know, your kids need to see you struggle with something. They need to see you come back up again. They need to see you angry, and then they need to see you work it out so they know that they shouldn't be afraid of anger. That was a huge part of the journey for me. Because anger, as I mentioned, was really scary and you didn't show it and it meant something bad was going to happen. So yes, I think that generally speaking, this whole modern parenting narrative of like, oh, you know, let's protect our kids from all the hard things is really like you're doing a disservice to your kids. They need to know that you can deal with tough stuff and come back from it and learn something from it.
And I think that idea, Amy and I both come from Irish Catholic families, and in broad strokes, the idea was like, we pack bad things away and yes. stuff them in the back of the closet, never to be heard from again.
I'm familiar. Yes.
That is how we roll. And I think it is a balance, right? You don't want to unpack that bag and just dump it all over your kid's head. That's not fair to them. They're not, you know, ages and stages, even older kids, they may not be ready for, you know, all the information about your inner life. I mean, I definitely remember being pretty late into my 20s before I thought to myself, like, oh, my mother thinks about something other than me. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I think your child's worldview is very child-centric, but finding that balance between being able to say, we are emotionally truthful, but we don't kind of unpack the bottom of the bags and throw it at each other.
Yeah, because, you know, and I know this from my sex ed work too, is that, you know, kids, they're going to tune you out too at some point. So I think it is really, you know, just looking for those natural connection points. Like I certainly wouldn't bring up my sort of emotionally abusive relationship with my 9-year-old because it's just not relevant. But with my teen, you know, if she is navigating a new relationship, then yes, I would just, and the message, really the top line message would be and has been, you deserve to be treated well by whoever you're going to be in a relationship with. And I've said to both my girls, like, you know, one of the things I really want for you guys is to just find someone who loves you and cares about you and thinks about you like as lovingly as your dad does for me. Like, so there are just like general, really not stressful messages, top line messages that really just dial back to value and, you know, valuing yourself as a human and knowing that you deserve good things. Like those are just really basic things that are important to communicate to our kids.
And I think there's a foundational piece of the ACEs study that is that taking the ACEs kind of survey and that it makes it okay to talk about what happens.
Mm-hmm.
The founder says, right, it removes the power that secrecy so often has to just own what happened to you.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big thing that, so when I wrote that post, I mean, I felt very passionate about it, but you know, like how it is on the internet, you write something or you produce something and you're not sure how it's going to land. And I was shocked by the response to that post and all of the, you know, both private and public messages of people sort of learning that either there was a connection to their lives that they hadn't understood, realizing that it was time for them to step up as an adult and, you know, try to look for those natural intersections where they could be a trusted adult or keep their eyes out for somebody in their neighborhood or whatever. I mean, that's like, you know, what you dream of or what I dream of is just finding a way to communicate a message that will help people sort of open their awareness and their hearts a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, I think shame is such a driver for so many things. And this is not a topic to be shameful about. When you are a kid, you know, experiencing things at the hands of other people, there are other cast members, you know, involved. And so it's not something you should shoulder all by yourself.
I want to end on sort of a note of hope because you have built this incredibly successful life. You have a wonderful spouse, wonderful children, just tons of success. You rebooted your own life. And I just want the person listening who might be at an earlier point in her journey to feel like that is possible. Can you tell us just a little bit about how you made this happen for yourself?
Wow, that's a big question.
It is a big question, but
I mean, I think that, you know, part of it was really, gosh, I hadn't really thought of it until this moment. So thanks, Amy. But I think maybe that's part of why I left academia. You know, like I remember being on the precipice of like the big dream that I had had. You know, I literally had just, you know, finished my very fancy postdoc. I was looking into faculty jobs and I was like, I'm good at this, but this is not bringing me joy or filling me up on a daily basis. And so, you know, leaving the field so that I could create things on my own terms and be in charge. I am a little bit bossy, you know, and autonomous. I like that was really important to me to have creativity and autonomy at my fingertips. And so
maybe
that was my like, okay, let's, you know, really lean into, you know, the joy and the things that I really care about and get excited about, you know, as a way to sort of navigate life. And then I think the other thing has really been, and this is my, you know, rally cry to everybody right now, like whether or not you have experienced ACEs, is to really identify that support squad, you know, both for the moments, you know, where you're happy and also the moments you need, you feel like you're going to lose it. And that would be like all of us right now. You know, I think parent stress is just such a huge factor when it comes to ACEs. Certainly that's where I find the grace in thinking about my growing up and what my parents were dealing with as, you know, immigrants in this country constantly, you know, being targeted racially, all manner of things, you know, like this is the time that, you know, you have to build your trusting relationships and your network in order to get through what we're going through right now.
Awesome. We like bossy ladies on this podcast, so perfect. We like to head towards the phrase, solved it on our podcast, but I don't think we're going to solve this one, Christine. But you definitely gave us lots of great insights, and I want everyone to come check you out wherever you are just to revel in. I mean, we could do really 45 minutes on like Christine's amazing life, but tell us where to find you and where people can check you out.
I guess the easiest place to find me and all the projects I do is at christineco.com. And I find that like people really, really want to chat with me on Instagram for some reason. I don't know what it is about that platform, but I'm Dr. Christine Co there.
Awesome. Thanks so much for this conversation.
I'm going to put a link to the ACEs questionnaire in the show notes for this episode, as well as a terrific article from Psychology Today that talks about the ways to recover from an ACEs childhood. And of course, a link to Christine Cove. Thanks for talking to us today, Christine.
This was awesome. Thanks, Christine.
Thanks. This was such a pleasure.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.